What's happening, everybody? Welcome to the Damage Report on a Thursday, a fantastic Thursday. I am Francesca Fiorentini in for John Iadarola, who is again doing nothing but skin to skin with his adorable newbie, being a dad, being a good dad, and of course taking parental leave that we should all be guaranteed in this trash ass nation that somehow we've come to live in. Sorry, that's how we're starting this Thursday. But to bring it up, since I'm always a little bit cynical, I'm so excited to have Abilina Sabrina with me, excuse me. Abilina Sabrina, what's going on, girl?
Good morning, good morning. Hello. Yes, absolutely. Everybody should be guaranteed their parental leave. So as much as we normally love John, take your time with your new baby dragon. And I'm so excited to be here with you today, Francesca.
Oh my gosh, it's like the first time, but you always like, again, add, like if I'm a little sort of like, yeah, sour and dour. It's been a hard week. My whole family's got COVID except for me. I'm looking to you for just like, you know, some levity, as we all are, and that lightness. And we're gonna talk about a lot of great things, you know, just Republicans fighting each other. That's always fun. Ooh. Turns out when they get what they want, they just are unhappy, like children who have all the power in the nation. We're gonna talk about Lauren Boebert being kicked out of a Beetlejuice show. We're gonna talk about Bill Maher being the absolute worst yet again. Is Joe Biden too old to run for president? Let's get into it. It seems like a lot of Democrats think yes. And then finally, one Republican senator is doing something that we wish other senators would do. And we're gonna get into who and what he is doing. Oops, I've said too much. But if you're here, you know what to do. Don't act like you're brand new, okay? Unless you are brand new, in which case I will say, like the stream, share the stream right now. Send us your super chats and your comments. I'll be reading those throughout the show if I open the doc at any point in my life. But with that, I'm super glad to have you guys with us. Sabrina, you ready to get into this?
Let's get going.
All right, let's do it. Let's begin with this.
Why not subpoena him and have him testify on Capitol Hill? Even if he doesn't say anything, that's going to be uncomfortable for the president to have his son testifying on the Hill.
Right, well, when I announced the investigation early on, I said we're going to follow the money. And Hunter Biden's more than welcome to come in front of the committee. If he wants to clear his good name, if he wants to come and say, you know, these weren't 20 shell companies, they actually did something. He's invited today. We will drop everything.
Yeah, but he's not gonna volunteer to do that. We both know that. But if you subpoena him, he then has to.
Right, that is a pretty direct question. Why don't you subpoena him? That is the head of the House Oversight Committee, one of the committees that has been specifically tapped by House Speaker Kevin McCarthy to begin this impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden. And this is also, that's James Comer. He has been the head of a committee that's been investigating Hunter Biden. And so far, no. He has not subpoenaed. No one has subpoenaed Hunter Biden to testify, and I wonder why. And this is actually a reason that some of the, I don't know, crazier, more extremist, less relevant and loudest Republicans are also mad at their fellow Republicans because they want that Hunter Biden subpoena. But there he is saying, well, I mean, he could calm down. He could just testify whenever, but he gets pressed on Newsmax, and here is a little bit more of that exchange.
Well, he can fight the subpoena in court. It's very difficult. You know, I think if it were easy to get a president or their son in front of a House committee, the January 6th committee probably would have done that with Donald Trump.
No, good point. Although son's different. Everyone always says Hunter Biden's a private citizen. So it's not like you're subpoenaing Joe Biden right now.
Right, okay, then he goes off the rails and really doesn't answer the question. So he's like, well, I mean, he could fight it. So anyway, I'm scared of fighting. So that's James Comer again. And Sabrina, I don't know how you read that, but for some reason, I have thoughts, they don't want to subpoena Hunter Biden yet, or if at all. And might that have something to do with the fact that they don't have a lot of evidence and the line of questioning might be a little thin were Hunter Biden to actually sit in front of their committee? What do you think?
I think the fact that they're even talking about Hunter Biden when they're trying to supposedly impeach Joe Biden at all is, Yeah, it shows that they don't really have that much. I mean, Hunter is very much not going to willingly go. I don't know why they haven't subpoenaed him yet, but yeah, probably because they don't have much. And also, I don't think Hunter would even care that much. Yeah, if you're trying to go after Joe, do that. Why bother with Hunter? You've got nothing.
Absolutely. And to their to this Newsmax reporters, who to his credit, he's right. And actually, to Cromer's credit, he's right that he could refuse a subpoena as well. That is true. Donald Trump refused his subpoena to the January 6th committee. Everyone knew that he wasn't going to testify to the committee. He was asked to testify. He defied that. The New Republic sort of breaks it down. You know, his administration refused to provide even information to the more than 100 congressional investigations into Donald Trump. And then Trump sued his own accounting firm to try to block it from giving his tax records to Congress. Remember that? So he fought every type of investigation into his shenanigans, his family shenanigans, the shenanigans he then pulled on top of shenanigans, crime on crime on crime. Now, what's interesting though, which makes me think that maybe Hunter Biden, if subpoenaed in this, again, very off the mark attempt, political hack attempt to just, you know, score points and impeach Joe Biden, maybe he would actually sit for it, because by comparison, nearly 70 Biden administration officials have provided testimony, either in hearings or transcribed interviews, to the oversight committee. Committee members have been briefed by high-level FBI, Secret Service officials. They have received thousands of documents from the Treasury and the FBI. And let's remind everyone, there's still nothing. All right, there's shell companies, there's a phone call Joe Biden himself might have been on because his son called him in the middle of a meeting and he was like, hey, what's up, son? But that's it. We don't have anything else. It's not illegal to sit on a company's board and use your dad's name to get it. Hey, he's a Biden, you know, okay, put him on the thing. And there is no evidence to show that he stopped an investigation into the former head of Burisma, right? No, if anything, it seems like Hunter Biden helped crack down on the corruption of that company. So there's just, you're gonna make, you know, fail sons trying to get jobs illegal. Is that illegal? How many senators' fail sons have jobs at corporations simply because of their last names right now? No, none of this is illegal. They know they don't have anything. And this is the reason also, and we'll get into this, why there's a little bit of a catfight in the GOP, because Matt Gaetz and others are mad that there's no subpoena. Now, granted, they're not on these committees, so they're not seeing the lack of evidence. But that's what it is. It's like Sabrina, it's like the game is, if he sits in, if he is subpoenaed, maybe he'll say something that totally destroys our, like, you know, very non-existent case, right? And he'll explain what he was doing on Burisma. He'll explain the phone calls, and that'll be that. He'll talk about his, you know, failure to pay a certain amount of taxes, which, by the way, we all know there is a special counsel appointed to investigate the tax fraud allegations, as well as a firearm allegation. Though that's already set up. So I just feel like they're afraid of him just kind of, you know, sitting down with his steely blue eyes and being like, oh my God, Hunter, I've seen your D-pics. Okay, fine. We have nothing against you or your dad. Any final thoughts?
Well, honestly, I feel like another reason they're focusing so much on Hunter Biden right now is because his name is such a buzzword for a lot of Republican audiences. It's almost like it's the equivalent to 2016's, but her emails. Oh, but Hunter Biden, you know, they're just kind of looking for anything that's going to bring more viewers in and maybe just stretch out this process and bring more eyeballs to it.
Exactly. Like if they actually were to reveal Hillary's emails, they'd just be like, wow, another Lane Bryant, you know, catalog sale, like really boring stuff. Why are the Republicans impeaching Joe Biden now? Was it a promise that Kevin McCarthy made to the Republican Freedom Caucus in exchange for their vote for his speakership? Or is there someone behind the scenes pulling the strings? maybe a bit of column A or column B. Turns out, yes, a former president, currently indicted, possible criminal, probable, definite criminal in certain circumstances, is pulling the strings from behind this impeachment attempt of Joe Biden. In fact, the former president has been speaking weekly with House GOP conference chair Elise Stefanik. She was the first member of the Republican leadership to come out in support of the impeachment. The two spoke Tuesday just after House Speaker Kevin McCarthy announced Republicans will be pursuing the inquiry, according to two people familiar with the conversation. But even before that, he's having dinners. He's meeting with Kevin McCarthy himself. So Sunday night, Trump had dinner at his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey with Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, an ally of Trump, if you didn't know. And I'm so happy if you didn't know who she was. And Kevin McCarthy himself. At the gathering, the topic of impeachment was discussed, according to a person familiar with the conversation who spoke on the condition of anonymity. And if you needed any more evidence that Donald Trump has wanted a Joe Biden impeachment, here he is bleeding. The Republicans in Congress, the well-meaning, keep talking about an impeachment inquiry on crooked Joe Biden. Again, to Sabrina's point, just making crooked now about Joe Biden instead of Hillary. Look, the guy got bribed. He paid people off. He wouldn't give $1 billion to Ukraine unless they, quote, got rid of the prosecutor. Biden is a stone cold crook. You don't need a long inquiry to prove it. It's already proven. These lowlifes impeached me twice. I won and indicted me four times for nothing. Either impeach the bum or fade into oblivion. They did it to us. And let's focus on that. Impeach the bum or fade into oblivion. In other words, I, with my MAGA wand made of doo-doo, will not anoint you if and when I am the president of all of the Lucy cigarettes in prison. Like he, like basically, like you're gonna fall out of favor with me, right? Impeach him or not. And what's so, let's never forget how ironic it is that Donald Trump was impeached for blackmailing the president of Ukraine to dig up dirt on Joe Biden. Again, Sabrina, this might very well be the same exact case. The Burisma stuff, the Hunter Biden stuff, which again, there's nothing there. There's literally nothing there. Nothing happened. Is it illegal for him to serve on this corporation because his dad is Joe Biden? Maybe. It's not written down anywhere. But so this is just so wild to me that they turn it completely on its head. Again, the projection always so strong, but you know, it makes sense. Like if you're a Republican and you wanna stay relevant with the MAGA base or at least Donald Trump, you're gonna go along with this impeachment. I guess my question to you is, don't you think they're then pulling some of these strings in these committees? Why wouldn't they just say like, subpoena him, or do they secretly know, nah, it's better not to. It's better to keep it kind of vague.
So something tells me that Trump is kind of a vengeful person. So if he were to be, you know, pulling some strings behind the scenes, then yeah, it would make sense that he would absolutely want, you know, Biden's name also associated with impeachment. Because right now, that's one of, you know, the biggest red flags about Donald Trump running again. Oh, but he's been impeached.
Twice.
And so I think that's him trying to kind of like muddy the waters and level the playing field for this next upcoming election. It's like, oh, well, he's impeached. Why can't I run again? Which for his base, like that could make sense. So yeah. I really think they're just throwing anything they have possible.
Yeah. And a reminder that when Democrats did lead the impeachment the first time, that was through Congress. There was a vote to begin the impeachment inquiry. It was not unilateral in the way that Kevin McCarthy has done. I mean, just like, I know it's really difficult because we live on the upside down, but if you could for a second imagine that Obama called Nancy Pelosi and said, I need you to begin impeachment inquiries, the impeachment inquiry into Donald Trump. Like that's effectively what happened. That is not at all how it played out, but that is what we're seeing now, that the former president calling on the House Speaker to impeach the current president. I mean, I don't know, does nothing matter anymore? Is corruption not a thing anymore? Is this just not a complete, like shoe on the other foot? Would Fox News not be running this 24/7 screaming their heads off? Would people not already be on the streets over this? Like, it's just wild to me what we've normalized. But here we are. At least there's this, guys. Republicans are actually not happy with one another. Take a look.
He seems to be implying that you are not doing these things for the reasons you say, but that you were requesting, or perhaps through other people requesting, some special handling or treatment in the ethics complaint. You're saying that's a lie tonight.
That is an abject lie from a sad and pathetic man who lies to hold on to power.
That would be one Speaker Kevin McCarthy that Representative Matt Gaetz is referring to. There he is being asked by Ari Melber why he made such a big stink on the House floor this week after the impeachment inquiry was announced by Kevin McCarthy, talking all about how Kevin McCarthy is not being true to the agreement that he made with the House Freedom Caucus. Remember, after that grueling 15-round vote rounds, rounds of votes that led to his speakership eventually. Remember how that fun week when we were like, do we have a government? I don't know. So there he is saying that it's not about an ethics thing. Now, the ethics thing has to do with possibly Matt Gaetz's own ethics conflicts and the fact that, yeah, he has been investigated into potentially trafficking a minor. That those charges have been dropped. That needs to be stated. But apparently, that was in a response to what Kevin McCarthy was saying. He said earlier, Matt is working with Eric Swalwell, but let me be very clear. McCarthy said, Matt is upset about an ethics complaint. I don't care what they threaten me against me. I'm not going to interject into an independent committee like ethics. I'm not going to put Swalwell back on the Intel committee so they can do whatever they want. McCarthy was referring to a probe currently being conducted by the House Ethics Committee into Gaetz. The investigation centers on the possible sexual misconduct, illicit drug use, and lobbying violations. Regarding Swalwell, House Republicans removed him from the Intelligence Committee this year, along with Representative Adam Schiff. Remember that bald-faced political move. So here we have Kevin McCarthy accusing Matt Gaetz of backdoor dealing with Eric Swalwell, blah, 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 blah. He's working with a Democrat to get some of this ethics committee like to ease up on him and his past. But more than that, Matt Gaetz says that's not what it's about. He's mad because Kevin McCarthy broke his promise to the Freedom Caucus. Here he is.
He lied to get power in January when he made this agreement, and he's lying now about the basis for breach. And you know what? Eventually, the lying has to come to an end, and the votes are going to start on a motion to vacate. I certainly hope that instead of that path, the speaker comes into compliance on term limits, balanced budgets, and single subject spending bills.
So yeah, that's what he wants. Term limits, balanced budgets, and single issue spending bills. I'm down with like maybe two of those. I don't know, I like term limits. Something tells me though that's not exactly what this is about, but it might be. I wanna flag, and Sabrina, please weigh in, because this is the week that like Republicans got their impeachment inquiry. And now you have Matt Gaetz grandstanding, threatening, we're going to give you a vote of no confidence, Kevin McCarthy. I mean, I just feel for Big Kev a little bit. Like, he's giving them everything he wants and they want. He's doing this to appeal to them, and Matt Gaetz is being mean.
I'm kind of surprised that he's choosing right now to kind of pick a fight with McCarthy. It seems like, especially if this is the time when you're trying to go in on impeaching Joe Biden, you should probably have a little bit more of a united front. Listen, if they want to have infighting and just tear themselves apart, go for it.
No, but you're absolutely right. I mean, this is why it's a little bit of kind of like a planned distraction. You know what I mean? It's, again, we talk about the subpoena. Nobody's subpoenaing Hunter Biden over in this impeachment inquiry. They get what they want, and then they say, no, it's not good enough. They get the special counsel appointed, Weissner, right? And they say, no, not Weissner. He's not good. So whenever they get what they want, they move the goalpost, they distract, they change it up. So this is Matt Gaetz's opportunity. Whether he's doing that to save his own hide because of this ethics investigation into his misconduct, or if it's just him trying to brand, or if it's just like a, no, no, guys, we shouldn't actually go further in the impeachment inquiry. We should just focus. I don't know, like, who knows? Maybe he's just jealous of McCarthy getting all the shine because he started the impeachment inquiry. It's not clear, but it is very fun, like you're saying, to see them not be able to unite around anything. Even when, again, it should be Christmas morning for them. What's interesting, though, is he's referencing this deal. What was the deal? What did Kev promise Matt and the rest of the Freedom Caucus when they finally voted for him instead of Jim Jordan or whoever the hell else they wanted? This was according to, well, actually originally reported by Punchbowl News, but apparently there is a secret three-page addendum that McCarthy and his allies hashed out during those several days of grueling negotiations with the House Freedom Caucus. The pact includes the most controversial concessions McCarthy made in order to become speaker: 3 seats on the Rules Committee for conservatives, freezing spending at 2022 levels, a debt ceiling strategy, coveting committee assignments, and more. Coveted committee assignments. It probably, if I'm gonna guess, it probably also was impeachment, but who knows? Here's Matt Gaetz finally. I apologize for subjecting you to Matt Gaetz, but here he is saying, nah, I don't even want the impeachment anymore. It's just for show.
He's throwing impeachment out like an ill-cast lure, and he has no real intent to follow through. By the way, if he did, we'd subpoena Hunter Biden. Like, if this was a serious effort, call it an inquiry, an impeachment, oversight, whatever you want. If you were really serious, you'd subpoena Hunter Biden, get answers. They're not serious, and that's why you see this failure theater in the absence of real accountability.
I mean, I kind of agree with that. I also think that Matt Gaetz is not on these committees. He's not seeing the lack of evidence. Maybe he would be changing his tune if he were James Comer and head of the House Oversight Committee and was like, oh, I'm gonna need more because I don't really have any line of questioning on Hunter Biden other than, so you say your eyes are blue, but aren't they a little green sometimes in the light? Like, it's just, but anyway, here they are. They're fighting, they're mad. It's not clear whether Marjorie Greene also joins him or Boebert or the other sort of idiots on the House Freedom Caucus. You know, this was already, Sabrina, sort of like a shot in the dark. It's not clear that this impeachment inquiry is what anybody wants, any voters, even though their God Donald Trump wants it. So then to also be sort of fighting as they're going into this, like you said, not the united front you might need.
Well, I think Gaetz is probably trying to channel, you know, Trump's angrier base to be like, look, see, these guys are in charge of the impeachment and they're too soft. They're not right. Going to bat for you, but I will. So I think he's trying to flip it to his advantage.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course. I mean, they hate Kevin McCarthy anyway. Nobody likes Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy doesn't like Kevin McCarthy. He's like, why am I Kevin McCarthy, man? Why can't I be AOC? That's what he says every morning when he looks in the mirror. But there he is, and this is what he's decided to do. So Godspeed to the inquiry. Have fun out there. Go get him. Go get Dark Brandon. Why don't we take our first break, though, with that? More news after this.
Everybody we talk to, every political discussion, it talks a lot about Trump, but when it comes to Joe Biden, people say, man, he's too old to run, isn't he? I mean, he's not really gonna run. When I say every discussion, I don't mean 99% of the discussions. Every discussion, we got it. I asked Reverend Al if he was hearing it all the time on our show this past week. He's hearing it as well. So, you know, we often will complain about Republicans who will say one thing about Donald Trump off the air and another on air. Well, let me just say, Democrats off the air will say Joe Biden's too old. Why is he running? On the air, they won't say that.
Well, you just did. Joe Scarborough on MSNBC there talking about Biden's age and how Democrats, I guess, or former Republicans, Joe, are talking about how Joe Biden is too old to run for re-election. So this is, again, not just a Republican thing, but I guess centrist Dems. I have a lot of thoughts on this, but this was all because of a new Washington Post op-ed by David Ignatius, a journalist, an author, who wrote this: President Biden should not run again in 2024. He goes into why. He says Biden would carry two big liabilities into a 2024 campaign. He would be 82 when he began a second term, which, let's be real, very young for the Senate. According to a recent Associated Press NORC poll, 77% of the public, including 69% of Democrats, think he's too old to be effective for four more years. Biden's age isn't just a Fox News trope, he writes. It's been the subject of dinner table conversations across America this summer. There is more about what he has to say in terms of vice presidents and Kamala Harris. But let's just look at this polling. This is a Wall Street Journal telephone poll that, yeah, so it's over 70% of Democrats say that he's too old to run for president. This is Joe Biden versus Donald Trump, whether they're too old. So let's see, has a vision for the, I mean, Republicans are just, is a likable person. I like that. I'm just looking at Joe Biden versus Donald Trump. People think Biden's more likable. Trump has a stronger record of accomplishments as president. Kill me right now. Okay, first of all, yeah, strong. Let's define strong. Ooh, yeah, putting kids in cages, real strong. Strong move. So, Sabrina, there's a lot of progressives, leftists. We have critiques of Joe Biden. Age is not in my top five. I'm gonna be totally real with you, and I'll even double down and say it makes me absolutely livid that in 2020, establishment Democrats, corporate Democrats, outlets like MSNBC and Joe Scarborough himself were shoving old ass Joe Biden then down our throats, all coalescing around the establishment. And now, 4 years later, when arguably he's a better president than he was candidate, now they're saying at this late hour that now he's too old? No, no, hell no. I'm sorry, hell no. Like, I don't like Joe Biden, but I will defend him on the age thing, okay? There are literal fossils in the Senate. And Joe Biden, yeah, he's not perfectly cogent in everything he says, but he's actually done quite a lot. The Inflation Reduction Act was good, not great. The student debt relief attempts, good, not amazing, right? The National Labor Relations Board allowing unionization to be far easier, very, very good. These are good things. Why? Why are we pulling the rug under the one guy who was able, and I'm not talking about wishes. If it was wishes, we go Cornel West. Why are they pulling the rug under the one guy who defeated Donald Trump? Now the establishment doesn't like him? What's going on? Are their stock portfolios not good? Like, what's up? What's happening? Is he too pro-labor for you? What has Dark Brandon done? Where has he touched you? Like, it's just, I hate this line. I hate this line of thinking, but please, you tell me, because I'm not in clearly the majority disagrees that he is too old. So please, your thoughts.
So I don't like Joe Biden either. I'll get that straight. But I wonder if maybe they're discussing it now because they're seeing the public react to figures like Mitch McConnell, like Dianne Feinstein, who are very old, very up there, and they're having issues. I would say that are more related to their mental capacity rather their age, because not everybody who's old is necessarily, losing it like Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm. quite old. He's still sharp as a tack. So I don't think age should be the issue here. I think it should be a matter of mental capacity. And I think you are right. Compared to how he was on the campaign trail versus what he's been doing lately, Biden has outperformed some of our expectations. I still do not like him, but I think that might be why that's more of a topic now, because they're seeing how all of us are reacting, and we're kind of shocked and scared in a way for people like Mitch McConnell. Like, that dude needs to retire for sure. So I think they're just trying to apply that to Joe Biden as well, even though there's definitely a few differences there.
Absolutely. No, I think you're right. And I think that they are, They're very different. Yeah, Mitch McConnell, like, stopping for 30 seconds is not the same as Joe Biden having a stutter moment. Like, it's not the same. Like, and Biden is, let's be honest, at Trump's level of incoherent coherence. Like, right? Like, they're both kind of on par. Like, they definitely both identify, which is a square and the triangle and the circle on whatever, you know, a senility test. Mitch McConnell and especially Dianne Feinstein, not so sure about that. Let's just throw this up because this was also an important part of this. Oh, no, this is for the, never mind. This is for the next, cut all this out, please. Oh, God. No, but let's go back to this op-ed, right? Because the next logical thing is to say, look, Joe Biden promised that he would be this transitional candidate. He said sort of that maybe he wouldn't run again, that he might actually pass the baton to his vice president Kamala Harris. This is what David Ignatius says, again, Washington Post, corporate media. Because of their concerns about Biden's age, voters would sensibly focus on presumptive running mates, Harris. She's less popular than Biden with a 39.5% approval rating, according to polling website 538. Harris has many laudable qualities, but the simple fact is she has failed to gain traction in the country or even within her own party. Okay, so David is not then saying we run or Democrats run Kamala Harris. So what is he saying? Okay, there's more. He says Biden could encourage a more open vice presidential selection process that could produce a stronger running mate, which I'm just laughing at because I love imagining Kamala Harris and how mad she would be. There are many good alternatives, starting with Mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass, whom I wish Biden had chosen in the first place, he writes. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, but breaking up the ticket would be a free for all that could alienate black women, a key constituency. Biden might end up more vulnerable. In other words, he doesn't really have any solutions. He's not actually floating that much, like, he's just saying he shouldn't run. What do they want? Who do they think can beat Trump? Are you gonna send Buttigieg in there? Your man Buttigieg, I know you guys think he's Superman. He's not Superman. He cannot defeat Donald Trump, all right? Like, sorry, he might defeat Ron DeSantis. He's not defeating Donald Trump. Kamala Harris, you're right. She is not popular. Joe Biden, I mean, if there's one thing that this administration did not do, was make Kamala Harris more popular. She couldn't do it, he couldn't do it. She's been kept on a very short leash. She hasn't been able to sort of do anything interesting. You know, again, not a very likable figure in policy or even honestly like in general personality, but is like, I think her best moment was when, you know, the fly landed on Mike Pence's head, but that was when they were running, right? And she was like, I'm speaking, like there, that was good. But so anyway, I cringe because the establishment, it keeps talking about how old he is, but they have no solutions. They have not actually cultivated a class of other younger centrist Dems to replace them. They just have these, yes, old and dangerously old people, and it's nothing against age, but yeah, who could be very close to senility and who probably should be retiring, but who are not. Joe Biden is not necessarily one of those people. So I'm just mad. Everyone can disagree with me in the comments, but when the establishment says they're too old, I get a little bit worried and wonder what the hell we're doing going into a fight against Donald Trump. And you guys are saying that your best guy for the job is too old now. What are we doing? What are we playing with? Let's move into this because there are some people who are actually taking the cues and retiring. Here we go.
I've spent my last 25 years in public service of one kind or another. At the end of another term, I'd be in my mid-80s. Frankly, it's time for a new generation of leaders. They're the ones that need to make the decisions that will shape the world they will be living in.
That's right. Sometimes senators do let go of power, and that's Senator Mitt Romney saying he's not going to seek re-election when his term ends in 2025. He is 76, actually kind of young for the Senate, considering Dianne Feinstein's 90, Mitch McConnell, I believe, 81, and they're not doing well. So Romney is saying he's not going to run for re-election. And the question, look, it is something that I think not enough senators do, clearly. And it could be a threat, a problem for this country that we have so many older folks in power. Just today, just recently, there was a Pentagon-funded study that shows that dementia among US officials poses a national security threat. Right there, these people have access to top secret information and they have had public health episodes. Dianne Feinstein had shingles, unable to walk, unable to sit for these crucial federal judge appointment votes. Mitch McConnell twice now on camera stuttering and not able to speak. That's on camera, y'all. Imagine what's happening behind the scenes. So Mitt Romney has taken his cue and he's saying, no, you know what? I'm calling it here. Apparently he is very worried about his health. He says his retirement was partially prompted by his fixation on death. He speculates he has about a dozen odd years left if his family history littered with sudden instances of heart failure has anything is anything to go by. Do I want to spend around 12 years I have left sitting here and not getting anything done? He asked. And the answer, I guess, is no. And what's interesting about that, Sabrina, is that Mitt Romney is also a conservative who is kind of the old world, right? He voted to impeach Donald Trump the second time. He doesn't believe in insane extremism, right? He's a Mormon. He arguably, although I probably disagree with him about a lot of his views on abortion, has a certain moral compass that I think most Republicans now, in their cravenness for just saying the most extremist thing and being the most loyal to Donald Trump, have completely lost the thread of. Mitt Romney, on the other, has been more and more part of a Republican wave that is dying out, and a younger, more radical base it has come in to supplant them.
I think it's a good thing that he's retiring, because also when I first read that, you know, he was planning to retire, I thought it was kind of early as well. And then I think you were the one that pointed out that he was in his 70s. I did not realize that he was even that old. So I feel like that makes so much sense. If anything, like a regular working class person probably would have retired like in their 60s. And, you know, here we have politicians who continue to choose to work well into their 70s, 80s. And I think it's probably a good thing for Romney to retire. I mean, there's nobody on their deathbed ever goes, oh, I wish I worked more. But who knows? Maybe it's different when you actually have power.
I mean, RBG is the exception, although she probably should have retired also.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and look, the polling shows in his own state of Utah that, you know, a little split, but that a lot of 32% said that he should not run again. So Utah voters were asked whether Romney should run again a second term in 2024. 35% of Utah voters said definitely. 21% said maybe. Another 12% said Romney probably shouldn't run. And 32% said definitely not. In a hypothetical matchup against Wilson and Staggs, these are, I believe, other Republicans, Romney received support from 44% of respondents, while Wilson had 6%, Staggs 3%, 1/3 of voters said another candidate, and 14% say they don't know who they'll vote for. In other words, kind of an open primary, most likely a Republican will fill his spot in the Senate, but not clear who that will be. That being said, again, Mitt Romney is losing support among the loudest part of the Republican Party, which is the most extreme part. So only very conservatives, those who identified as very conservative, only 10% said he should run again. I think more moderate conservatives say, yeah, he's doing an okay job. The one person who's super happy that he's not running again is, of course, Donald Trump. Donald Trump bleated fantastic news for America, the great state of Utah, and for the Republican Party, Mitt Romney, sometimes referred to as Pierre Delecto. What is this? What is that? Someone tell me what Pierre Delecto is. Pierre Delecto will not be seeking a second term in the US Senate, where he did not serve with distinction. A big primary fight against him was in the offing, but now that will not be necessary. Congrats to all, make America great again. I mean, he was your party's nominee for president. He ran against Barack Obama. Like, sorry, he didn't go full Islamophobe with it, but he also was a pretty nasty guy in a lot of other ways we'll get to. But of course, it's because Romney has disagreed with Donald Trump. He's publicly opposed Trump as far back as 2016. In March of that year, gave a speech lambasting what he viewed as Trump's lack of moral character and coherent policy positions. In 2018, Romney successfully won a Senate seat from his adopted state of Utah and broke party ranks to vote to impeach President Donald Trump twice. Here's what I'll say about Mitt Romney. He's not a cuck. All right, sorry. He's the one Republican who, after naysaying Donald Trump, after saying that he was a threat to this country, after saying he was immoral, after saying he would be a terrible fit for president, did not flip-flop. Yeah, he had a steak dinner with Donald Trump. Yeah, maybe he sought a cabinet position, who knows? But he stuck to his guns. You can't say the same thing about Ted Cruz. You can't say the same thing about Lindsey Graham. You can't say the same thing about anyone who worked in the Trump administration. They all also had their doubts and they completely flip-flopped. And it doesn't matter because he just wants loyalists in his back pocket. So that being said, let's remember Mitt Romney on the campaign trail, I believe in 2012, talking about 47% of Americans. This is a fun throwback to a not so fun Romney moment.
There are 47% of the people who will vote for the president no matter what. All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they're entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it.
To health care, they want to eat. 47% of Americans want to eat. This is ridiculous. So that was a really fun moment. Again, the quiet part out loud. He's in this donor dinner. Of course, he's going to say that. We're so jaded. We've heard so much worse, Sabrina, since then. But you know, go with grace and all of your money, Mr. Romney. Guy Smiley, guy who left a dog on top of a car, because that did happen. A federal judge on Wednesday has once again declared that DACA, or the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, that program is unlawful. However, the judge chose not to order the immediate deportation of recipients of DACA, more than 500,000 to be specific. So good. I have friends who are DACA recipients, and I'm sure we all are them or know them. That's Judge Andrew Hannon from US District Court in the Southern District of Texas. He was appointed by George W. Bush. And he also found in 2021 that the original DACA was unlawful. In his order Wednesday, Hannon said there were, quote, no material differences between the original 2012 DACA and the rule published by the Biden administration in 2022 to transform the program into a federal regulation. As such, he wrote, the final rule suffers from the same legal impediments. Biden was attempting to make DACA more permanent, which was always the plan. I want everyone to remember that DACA was a last resort. It was a, what do we do with all of these people who are brought again to the United States as minors, who had under no decision making of their own power and have been living basically in the shadows, undocumented for all that. This was a step, a pathway to citizenship. 2012, guys, it's been almost a decade. And that's how broken our immigration system is. But anyway, back to the judge. He agreed to request from Republican officials in Texas and 8 other states to declare the Biden administration regulation illegal. But Hannon did not grant another request to order a complete termination of DACA over 2 years. In 2021, Hannon also allowed existing DACA beneficiaries to continue to renew their 2-year work permits and deportation protections, despite closing the program to new applicants. The problem is this, DACA recipients are still in limbo. When they're not citizens, when their names are still in this program, when they're sort of neither this nor that, neither citizens nor undocumented, they are prohibited from doing a lot of things, not opening and owning businesses, like tax benefits. It's just a limbo motion, but at least I guess this judge is being, I don't know, he's being consistently awful. And he's not ordering deportations as was requested by these Republican and Texas officials. But Sabrina, they live to fight another day.
I mean, that's good for now, but I mean, they still have to continue to live in fear. So even though they're not, you know, hooray, they're not deporting them right now, just the fact that there's that constant possibility, it's still so cruel and inhumane. Yeah. So I don't know how big of a win this is.
Yeah, it's more of a like status quo. And Biden is going to appeal. It looks like the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals to review the Hannon's ruling. And Congress has considered several bipartisan proposals to provide permanent legal status to DACA recipients and other unauthorized immigrants brought into the country. The bills have been caught up in broader partisan debates over immigration issues such as US policy along the southern border. Remember, every time there's a small victory for undocumented folks, there is a massive loss for border militarization and people who are attempting to come into this country safely. It's always a horrible deal with the devil. But let's move on to our final story here in our first hour, if we can squeeze this guy in.
I don't think she was thrown 40 feet either. I think she went up on the hood, hit the windshield, then when he hit the brakes, flew off the car. But she is dead. No, it's a regular person. Yeah. Yeah, just write a check. Just. $11,000. She was 26 anyway. She had limited value.
Okay, what you just saw there is body cam footage showing a Seattle cop, Daniel Ouderer, who is a leader in the local police union, that's fun, making shockingly flippant comments about a South Asian woman killed by one of his colleagues earlier this year. That's right. She was 23 years old, Janavi Kandula, saying that she had, quote, limited value. So what happened exactly? So Kandula was a graduate, this is graphic two, graduate student at Seattle University's Seattle's Northeastern University. She was killed in January when another officer responding to an overdose call in the South Lake Union neighborhood drove into her as she walked across a crosswalk. The Seattle Times reported that the officer, Kevin Dave, had been driving at 74 miles an hour and Kandula was thrown more than 100 feet. Here she is, and here is the a-hole who was speaking about her, calling her low value, limited value, just write a check, $11,000. I just want to play because he apparently has a little bit of it. He's sorry though. After this story's gone public, he said, I intended the comment as a mockery of lawyers. I laughed at the ridiculousness of how these incidents are litigated and the ridiculousness of how I watch these incidents play out as two parties bargain over a tragedy. Sabrina, do you buy that? He was talking about the justice system.
Absolutely, don't buy it for a second. I hate. Obviously, I'm going to say it right now, I'm Team ACAB, but this man in particular, it kind of sickens me that in a lot of the writings about this incident, they're like, oh, well, he was a union leader, as if they're trying to like mesh values that like leftists typically care about. But I just want to remind people that police unions are not the same as like regular like workers unions. Unions are meant to give workers who usually have little to no power individually to give them power when they bargain collectively. When you give police, who already do have individual power, when you give them the freedom to like have a union, you get a gang. And that's what allows them to keep getting away with crap like this over and over and over. It's not just like a couple of bad apples, it's all of them. And the fact that they're able to just like look at this guy and be like, oh, well, we get rid of him. No, it's the entire system that allows him to stay there until this comes to light.
Yeah.
And then they have to take a position.
Absolutely. You don't laugh like that unless you know that you will face, nor your fellow officer will face any consequence. It's funny to you. Life loss is funny to you. Speeding and endangering the people you're supposed to protect is funny to you. And I agree, unless we rein in the power of police and especially the police unions, we're going to keep having this cavalier attitude when they kill innocent people. That is all the time we have for the first hour, but there is more in the aftermath, you guys. If you're on linear, this is it. If you want to stay, go to YouTube slash damage report, the damage report. All right, more in the aftermath.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.